all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. It's Thursday, April 20th, 2023, and coming up this hour, being good to the kids. In our hometown health segment at 7:30, a pediatric psychologist describes the harm that politicians are doing when they punch down, bully, and attack children who are undergoing uncertainty about sexuality and gender. We'll have Dr. Kristen Lyerly joining us with a guest about that coming up in a few minutes. Later in the hour, we will have Luke Mathers along to talk about all things Civic Media, what you find on radio stations all around Wisconsin and shows that are coming up this weekend. But let's turn first to our guest for this half hour. We've talked about in our next half hour, it's going to be about being good to the kids. How about if we be good to the planet as well? State Representative Katrina Shanklin joins us from Stevens Point, Democrat from the Stevens Point area. Katrina, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing? It's Earth Week, so I appreciate the focus on the planet.
We appreciate it as well. We appreciate what you do because I've been looking through the archives and looking at it seems like pretty much every year around Earth Day you're putting some legislation in that is meant to do good for the amazing natural resources that we have here. And I guess to charitably put it, legislation that gets mixed reviews, you know, by the folks who've been controlling the legislature for a dozen years. Let's start with you first. Why is that a priority for you? Why do I seem to associate you with good Earth Day legislation?
I appreciate that. Well, first and foremost, I represent my district, and here in central Wisconsin, we have an embarrassment of riches when it comes to sustainability organizations and experts. I got my start at the Midwest Renewable Energy Association, so I have a climate resiliency and clean energy background, but we also have so many people at the College of Natural Resources, Farm Shed, Recycling Connection, and so much more. And so for me, it isn't just personal, it's representing my district. We have people who care a lot about a healthy climate, land and water, and healthy planet. And it seems right and prudent to introduce the majority of my environmental legislation on Earth Day every 2 years.
So tell us a bit more about some of the things that your legislation would do, either some things that you put up in the past that have passed, no pun intended, and other things where it's like year after year, you're trying to get your colleagues on board with some idea or proposal. What have all your proposals been like?
So a lot of them have been related to restoring local control, believe it or not. So I have three different local control bills, one of which would restore local control for shoreline zoning. This is Up North News, so I want to say the further north you go, the more support you will actually find for restoring local control, mm-hmm. especially as it relates to shoreline zoning, because the majority of our beautiful Wisconsin lakes that we recreate on are up north. And so when I first started talking about restoring local control to shoreline zoning standards in the 2016-2017 timeframe after it was repealed in the 2015 budget, I got a lot of pushback from then Senator Tom Tiffany because I found at least 30 different lake associations in his Senate district that supported the bill. And I was like, this is what your constituents want, my friend.
Exactly. And I'm gonna stop you right there. I'm going to go ahead and make the political point. If you want to jump on it, you can, or you can just stay with protecting the resources. But as you know, I and a whole lot of other people lost our legislative seats in 2010 with the mantra from Republicans at the time that they were the party of local control. And ever since then, it has been this, I don't even want to say drip, drip, drip. It's been a deluge of things that Tom Tiffany in the legislature before leaving for Congress and others have led the way to remove local control, which was a good idea for them until they had the ability to have state control. So for folks that don't normally follow state politics, that's what Representative Shanklin is telling us about and the work to restore that local control to local units of government right down to lake protection districts.
Absolutely. And so what's interesting to me about that is I have a memo on my website when there was one-party rule amongst all levers of government from 2011 to 2018 by state Republicans. And it showed that during that time, they passed bills that were either unfunded mandates or repealed local control 180 times. And so many people didn't believe me that I just put the nonpartisan memo from the Legislative Fiscal Bureau on my website so people could see it. And I still to this day get inquiries, I want to say at least monthly, but it's usually more, it's usually at least weekly. So that's an issue that I've been trying to champion for a while, because Republicans talk a good talk when it comes to supporting local government and restoring local control, but they're the ones seizing it. And I think more and more people understand that now. Another bill that they passed in 2018, which Koch Industries was lobbying for, was a bill to repeal local control as it relates to not just plastic bag bans, but any kind of container ban. And it allowed, it removed the ability for local governments to have like a 10-cent fee for plastic bags within their city, town, or village, for example, but also for compostables or glass or cardboard, you name it. It was just a full sweep. So usually on Earth Day, I introduce a bill to restore local control for that as well. And people will say, well, why is that so important? And I'll mention, well, literally, as I was working on this bill, my city council in Stevens Point was working on a plastic bag ban. And they, the city attorney emailed me to say, hey, did this bill pass? Did we lose power? I said, yep, you no longer can represent your community. So that's just one more example of the silliness and absurdity.
Yes, and it got even more silly, you know, this week as we lead into Earth Week, you know, again with the trope of first it was Republicans are coming to take your guns, now it's they're coming to take away your gas engines and gas powered automobiles, which is not the case. Katrina Shanklin is our guest. We're going to take a break. We will come back with Michael Cairo from Weatherology. We'll give us a quick update on how weather is looking heading into the weekend, then more of our conversation with Representative Katrina Shanklin next on Up North News Radio. State Representative Katrina Shanklin in just a moment, and then at 7:30, Hometown Health with Dr. Kristen Lyerly and a pediatric psychologist talking about how we can stop the political bullying of trans kids. But first, it's time to get an update from Weatherology. Meteorologist Michael Cairo joins us to help take us into the forecast for the weekend. Michael, good morning.
Yeah, good morning. Still looking pretty active out there across the state of Wisconsin for today, especially across the southern half of the state. We did have quite the numerous accounts of severe weather, some large hail and some gusty winds with those strong storms yesterday. And unfortunately, another day with some strong to severe storms anytime from the late morning and on into the afternoon time frame. Again, that threat for some hail and some gusty winds are the primary threats with any of the storms. Can't completely rule out either an isolated tornado threat later on today as well. So definitely something to keep tabs on, keep it tuned here for any watches and warnings that do come out later on today. But pretty mild across southern portions of the state by this afternoon. We'll have those high temperatures working up well into the 60s from Madison over to near Milwaukee, sticking closer to the middle range of the 50s up near Wisconsin Rapids, and I think we'll stay confined to the upper range of the 40s for areas like Wausau by this afternoon. And then as we head into the night tonight, that batch of showers and storms continues to pull away on off to the northeast. Overnight lows dropping back into the 30s pretty much for all the state except areas down to near Milwaukee and points off to the south from there could just stick closer to some lower 40s. By the time we get to your Friday, I think we sneak by with a dry day for Madison, Oshkosh, Fond du Lac, as well as Milwaukee. But northwestern portions of the state, like Amory up to near Park Falls, do pick up a chance for some scattered light rain and even some snow shower activity, but little in the way of snow accumulation expected up that way. We'll stay confined to the 40s for highs for Eau Claire over to near Wausau, mid-50s, though, for Madison as well as Milwaukee. All of us getting in on the cooler temperatures then as far as your weekend forecast, looking at 40s for highs statewide, could maybe even struggle to get out of the upper 30s into the northwestern corner of the state on Saturday. Chance for some scattered light rain activity for southern Wisconsin, but some wet snowflakes could mix in across the north. And then by the time we get to your Sunday forecast, most of us looking to stay dry. Areas north of Wausau, though, could still see some light snow shower activity there for Sunday, but still cooler than average. Still calling for 40s for highs statewide on Sunday.
And if you don't believe that forecast from Michael Cairo, he will sick a big old dog on you, and he's not afraid to do it. Actually, what happens is, because he's a meteorologist, what happens is most dogs will bark at the postman if they go by. This one barks at non-meteorologist TV weather people. The dog just knows and will bark at them. Michael, thank you very much. Appreciate the forecast. Have a great day.
Have a good day. Yep.
All right. Back now with Katrina Shanklin, state representative from Stevens Point. We are talking about, wait a minute, is that you with the dog?
That's my dog. Ah! I'm so sorry.
I didn't see you reacting at all in the camera.
I wasn't sure.
And I can't see Michael.
I'm so used to pretending like she's not barking. I'm going to try to call her in. Lyra, come on. She's very excited about Earth Day.
We are very pro animals and kids on this. We remember in the early days of the pandemic, and you know, people were trying to keep the kids at bay, and they'd come in, or the cat would walk across the screen. And I think we've all kind of mellowed out about that. It's like, look, we're all at home. If the dog or the cat comes through, if the kid comes in, it is what it is. So
exactly. We are
all used to barking dogs in our neighborhood, so we're fine. So while we have some natural sound in the background, let's pick up where we left off on local control. And you were going to say that effort still goes on today.
Absolutely. I mean, we saw on the legislative session on Tuesday in the assembly that there are two different bills to take away local control regarding energy sources as well. And ironically, you know, they were talking about freedom and the free market, and we were all just sitting there like, do you guys hear what you're saying? Do you even know what you're talking about as it relates to freedom? You're literally tying the hands of local government for probably the 200th time at this point, right? So I have another bill that would restore local control specifically for the regulation of pesticides. There are only 4 states in the nation that actually allow municipalities, towns, villages, and cities to do that. And so specifically related to lawns, there are a lot of people who just don't even know the harmful use of pesticides. And, you know, if a city council wants to set a standard or a village board wants to, they should be able to. So I have a bill related to that. So 3 different bills to restore local control specifically related to making sure we have healthy water and land.
Governor Evers, of course, is getting involved in Earth Day coming up and announced the establishment of a green ribbon commission, not a blue ribbon commission. Do you want to tell us a bit more about that? Because apparently he and you share some of the same ideas.
Absolutely. Yeah. So I'm excited about his Green Ribbon Commission. It is the governor's Green Ribbon Commission on Clean Energy and Environmental Innovation. And really what it's going to do is it will charge the Department of Administration, the Wisconsin Economic Development Corporation, and the members of the commission who are yet to be appointed, but his order specifically requires that the tribes be consulted and involved, which is great. And it'll charge them with ensuring and putting together a model for what many states call a green bank, but what some more purple or red states are actually calling clean energy innovators. They're the same thing, but language matters. So I want to mention that in case people want to talk to their neighbors about this. Really, clean energy innovators or green banks are all about driving innovation, supporting new technology, and lowering the price of clean energy and energy efficiency as we transition to a clean energy economy. These are family supporting jobs that can't be outsourced, and they save lots of money for households, businesses, and farmers. And so I'm excited about this. I'm especially excited because since 2013, I've introduced a green bank bill. I don't call it a green bank, but what I would call it is the Wisconsin Renewable Energy Development Authority, and it would be modeled after WIDA, which has successfully distributed over, I think, $8 billion now in loans for housing to make housing more affordable. And so my model is based on a revolving loan fund. And so when I saw this yesterday, I was getting ready to talk about green banks and clean energy innovators. And here we have Governor Evers leading the way on his Green Ribbon Commission right before Earth Day, which I'm really excited about.
And I'm happy to see that Democrats and in elected office are not a lot were frankly kind of shying away. They didn't want to be associated with, you know, the Green New Deal, because Republicans like to turn everything into a boogeyman. And I have said repeatedly that this current crop of legislative Democrats is the strongest, the gutsiest one that I've been watching for decades. And I love seeing you not shy away from this, because you know, this is what folks want. Yeah, there's some loud folks that say, you know, the government's coming from a gas stove. But by and large, people want to see the advances in technology. They want to see the ability for the marketplace to give them, you know, these choices. And, you know, so hats off to you and the rest of the delegation for you know, standing up for what the values of a lot of Wisconsin folks.
Thank you. Yeah. And what I always say is it's a triple bottom line, right? It's good for our health. It's good for the economy, and it's great for the earth. And so these issues just make sense, and we can't let the other side take these issues away from us by making things up and creating and instilling fear in people. When if I go to a farm and talk to farmers about saving money, they're all for it. They're all for it. And so let's just keep working together on issues like this, because when it comes to my colleagues in the legislature, what I'm hopeful for is with, you know, fear maps down the road, potentially, which we've been pushing for a decade, we'll see more reason in the legislature, more people who think like what is best for the average person in Wisconsin, and we'll be able to have more fruitful and productive conversations and hopefully laws signed because of that.
It is far past time to recognize that this period of minority control is an anomaly compared to the Wisconsin values that we normally see in government. And you mentioned making things up. And so I have to come to a related issue, which is the Pelican River Forest. And for folks who missed it in the last hour, I spent about 15 minutes or so detailing the background of what would be the largest land conservation purchase ever. But it's misinformation about it by the Republicans who live in that area that is preventing this major purchase, which is going to be so good for recreation. It's going to be so good for working and sustainable forestry practices. And yet, Katrina, you feel like you're constantly correcting the record of your colleagues.
What's really interesting about this proposal is, regardless of who I speak with about it, I have not found anyone opposed to it other than the Republicans on the Joint Finance Committee, who they unanimously voted against it, the largest conservation deal in state history. The further north you go, I see people who actually want this and who understand how important it is. And we've been getting resolutions from local government up there sending support for the Pelican River Forest Project. So I continue to be amazed that my Republican colleagues aren't listening to their constituents. And I'm very disappointed that during Earth Week, Republicans unanimously voted it down. I'm a member of my local Isaac Walton League. They're incredible. They care a lot about land and water conservation. I would say probably the majority of them vote Republican. This was one of the first questions that I had when I went to them recently to just present on the legislature. They wanted to know exactly what's going on with the Pelican River Forest Project, and I think they'll be very disappointed to hear what happened. So this should not be political. It should not be partisan. It's about what's good for all of us. I don't know anyone who doesn't want more public land preserved for future generations personally. And so to see legislators do the opposite of what the average person in Wisconsin wants is really disappointing.
Oh, there's no doubt about that whatsoever. Katrina Shanklin is our guest, state representative from the Stevens Point area. We, of course, are heading into the state budget season, which, as folks know who follow the legislature, I mean, the state budget is this great big catch-all. It's the one thing that has to pass. There's so many moving pieces that go into it. So as you watch the process unfold, are you watching one or two things as either a personal priority of yours or a district priority? What are the things that you think can turn that budget into a win-win if and when Republicans and Governor Evers, you know, reach agreement on a final document?
Absolutely. I'm watching a number of things. I think number one, we want to make sure the tax reform that's done is fair to the average person in Wisconsin. We want to make sure it works for working families in the middle class. Number two, shared revenue. I honestly think that has to be the biggest issue. If we're not restoring our state share of shared revenue back to the local municipalities that are struggling to fulfill basic services, then we're not doing our jobs. We need to use our historic surplus to increase shared revenue significantly, whether it's police, fire, and EMS, our public safety, or basic government services like garbage pickup. Our local governments need that money. I'm also watching childcare. Childcare counts as a huge issue for our constituents across the state. And if we're going to talk about the economy and workforce development, we have to be bolstering and strengthening the Wisconsin childcare workforce and making childcare more affordable for working families. And then finally, the governor has a $106 million proposal for PFAS. And regardless of if your community has PFAS contamination, what is most important to know about Wisconsin is that we don't have dedicated long-term funding for PFAS mitigation. And the governor's three-pronged plan is going to help us with that. We also have money from the federal government for that, but this will really strengthen and really I would say, supercharge the efforts to make sure our water is clean and healthy.
And I'll just leave you with this image. And I don't know if you're familiar with the meme of the guy in the hot dog suit saying, "We are all trying to find out who did this."
Yes.
When Mary Falzkowski talks about, you know, the forest plans and that her school districts and local governments are really feeling tight budgets right now, I want to see her in a hot dog suit saying, "We're trying to find out who did this." It was you, Senator Falzkowski, and your colleagues. Katrina Shanklin, it's such a pleasure to have you on. Thanks for your time, and hope you enjoy the day.
Thank you for having me. Happy Earth Week.
Thank you. We will be back with Hometown Health, Dr. Kristen Lyerly and her guest, talking about pediatric psychology and the political bullying of trans kids. Coming up next, you're Up North.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
.733 on a Thursday morning. This is Up North News Radio. Pat Wrightlow here. Kristen Lyerly over there somewhere in, I believe, you're back in, are you back in Green Bay?
I am, Pat, and you better be good to me.
Mm-hmm. How can we not, please?
That's how it's got to be now.
Nice to have you here. And as always, this time every week, you bring us a guest. We talk about ways that we can keep our community a little bit more healthy. And one way we can keep our community healthy is with a very simple message to our elected leaders. Stop bullying kids. Mm-hmm. I hope I emphasized that well enough. And now you're going to put a much more positive and productive spin on it with your guest. Tell us more.
Well, we learned not to bully when we were children, but some of us have forgotten that lesson. Amen. So today, to remind us, is Dr. Eva Igler. She is a pediatric psychologist who works with a lot of kids from the LGBTQ+ community. So she's here to let us know a little bit about the experience that these kids have and how we can help. Dr. Igler, welcome.
Well, thank you. I'm excited to be here. And like I said during the break, like channeling my frustration and fury.
Well, that's really what this show is about, is channeling frustration, fear. First off, giving it a home to walk in and then trying to transform it into positive action, which is more than what other people do in big, you know, marble columned buildings and things like that.
Emotion-driven behavior isn't always bad.
Yeah.
See, folks, that's your psychology already this morning. Here we go. So, Dr. Igler, you are a pediatric psychologist, and in your practice, you care for kids who identify as members of the LGBTQ+ population. What is it like to work with these kids who are not unlike all kids? All kids are kind of going through who are they and, you know, figuring out where they fit in, but these kids are special. What is it like to work with them?
So I think it's important to note that my specialty is not necessarily just working with the LGBTQ+ community. I specialize in working with kids with epilepsy and neurological conditions. So I've always worked in the chronic illness population. And I point that out because to say that LGBTQ kids and that community is everywhere. And no matter where you practice or what you do, you're going to encounter these kids. And what you say and what you do is really important. It matters. And they listen and they know what's going on. I would say that weekly I talk about frustrations that these kids and teens have just about how they're perceived, how they view themselves, how other people may view themselves. Are they safe? Really basic things that we might, as adults, might assume that kids aren't thinking about or aren't worried about.
And I think in these times when they are really in the spotlight, I mean, politicians have really become motivated to enact laws that affect kids from this community, specifically kids who identify as trans. And those politicians don't treat them as people, but more like pawns in their political games.
Yeah, so, it's incredibly dehumanizing. And like the kids I work with and kids in general know it and they feel it. So I'm going to just share some stats from the Trevor Project about LGBTQ youth. So about 45% of LGBTQ youth seriously considered attempting suicide in the past year. It's about half. That's a lot of kids.
Wow.
Teens. However, LGBTQ youth who felt high social support from family and community reported attempting suicide less, about half the rate of those who felt low or moderate support. So, and when I say community, I don't just mean their school or their hometown. I mean, you know, the larger community we have in the United States, including the political environment. And I want to be clear when I say these stats, being a part of the LGBTQ plus community is not the problem here. It is not being gay or trans that causes suicidality. It is the community around them and the message they're getting. They are not the problem. The problem is around them.
It's absolutely shocking that half of these kids have considered attempting suicide in the last year. We know that mental health is a crisis. We talked about this last week with, especially with kids, but like these numbers are staggering.
They're shocking. I mean, my comfort with talking about suicide and suicidal ideation is probably higher than most people. But seeing these make me really nervous. It makes me really nervous when I meet someone for the first time. I have, you know, in the past had patients that don't disclose their gender or sexual identity to me immediately because they're worried that I won't accept them, that I'll tell their parents without their knowledge. And, you know, I like to think I'm an ally. I like to think that I am clear about my views and how I feel that they are important and worthwhile and they're a person, despite the kind of dehumanizing language that's used in our political environment. But, you know, until I explicitly state that, for some kids, that's not enough.
I don't want to turn this too political, but I'm going to bring up political points so that we can turn it into better communication points. And what I mean by that is we hear folks on the far right talk about quote unquote parental rights and that they shouldn't be surprised to learn that they have a child who is having issues with sexuality or gender, which to me, the proper response is if this is catching you off guard, your problems came long before you found out what was going on. So really, parental rights sounds like a kind of a convenient excuse to finally get involved in communicating with kids when you should have been a better communicator some time ago.
Yeah. And I just want to make a point about to correct you a little bit, Pat, of the language you used. They're not necessarily issues, right? They're not issues with the kid. Again, this speaks to the issues surrounding them in the community. You know, you can't predict this. You can't look at an 8-year-old and say like, oh yeah, they're going to be trans someday. I mean, some kids, maybe you have a suspicion, but their experience is their experience. Part of my ethics code includes respect for people's autonomy. And that includes kids and teens. To assume that you shouldn't respect bodily autonomy and that your parental rights have some kind of precedent over someone else's autonomy and their identity is just kind of baffling to me. Also, like, yes, kids question things, they're going back and forth, but then you create a safe space for them to do that. And it's okay to say, hey, I want to use these pronouns for a little bit and see how they feel. And then, you know what, maybe those aren't for me. And then you're like, all right, and not shaming them or being surprised necessarily when that happens.
And Pat, you didn't want to make it political, but I'm going to. Because as Dr. Egler said, it's not just about the people in your family that create that supportive environment, but it is the community that you live in. And politicians are making it a less supportive environment for kids. So how do you see some of these anti-trans efforts affecting your patients?
So, I mean, I work in Minnesota and I live just over the border in River Falls in Wisconsin. I'm dual licensed in both states because I do see a lot of Wisconsin patients virtually. This speaks to what you talked to last week. There's just not a lot of providers in Western Wisconsin. but, you know, in Minnesota and even to some degree Wisconsin, we have relatively kind of safe laws, particularly in Minnesota. For kids who identify as part of this community. However, that still impacts them because they're not necessarily going to stay in Wisconsin or stay in Minnesota forever. Maybe they want to go to college and come back. And so they're really thinking about their safety in, do I change my name? Do I specify my pronouns? Where do I go to school? Is it safe for me to share things with other people? You know, there's a lot of misinformation that is being spread, particularly as part of this political movement against LGBT kids. I mean, it's bullying behavior, as you put it earlier, essentially, which is very frustrating because parents hear that and then they get confused. And then I'm, you know, in the office trying to undo that language.
And misinformation includes terms like conversion therapy, which sounds like therapy, like it's a good thing, but it's not.
To give the background on that, this thing, which has been regularly and rightly branded as, you know, child abuse, is something that Wisconsin public health officials would like to see banned. Mm-hmm. But Republican legislators in this session prevented that ban from taking place. So with that background as to where Wisconsin stands right now, Dr. Igler, tell us more about conversion, quote unquote, therapy.
Yeah, so I get really frustrated when people co-opt my language of my profession. It's not therapy. The APA, the American Psychological Association, refers to it as sexual orientation change efforts. That includes gender and sexual orientation change efforts. And typically, it is not done by a licensed professional. I mean, unfortunately, that's true. I can only speak to my licensing board in both states of Wisconsin and Minnesota. But if you know of a licensed psychologist that you think to be engaging in this, report them to their licensing board. They should lose their license or at very least have it suspended. The UN Human Rights Council describes it as degrading, inhuman, and cruel. And there's really no evidence based for it. I mean, it's not therapy. That's implying there's something therapeutic or there's some benefit. But it can cause serious harm, and it has caused serious harm.
So to be really clear, although conversion therapy sounds like a good thing, it's a terrible thing.
And I can't believe I'm saying this, because when I was in undergrad in like 2005, I knew this, right? I knew this almost 20 years ago.
And yet we have a political climate now to turn things over to Minnesota, where you practice. We have been regularly seeing and featuring clips from some of the new Republican members of the Minnesota legislature. One clip we played yesterday talked about how he called 911 because there was a drag show going on, and he urged other people to call 911 when they see anything resulting in, you know, that kind of behavior, which, again, it's not as if law enforcement isn't, you know, stressed enough already, but mm-hmm. to take this kind of ugliness and put it in our state capitals and potentially on law enforcement just makes your job that much tougher.
Yeah, I mean, it really does. And it, you know, targeting drag shows, targeting trans youth, these so-called bathroom bills, it's just telling people that they don't matter and they don't exist and they don't even understand themselves. I tell all of my patients, you know, we all have our expertise. I have my own expertise, but you're the expert in you. I can't get in your head. You're the only one that can share your experience. And it's my job as your psychologist to treat you with something called unconditional positive regard. It's a basic tenet of being a therapist or psychologist is I respect you. I trust you. And, you know, if there's an issue with trust, we talk about that as it comes up. But my job is to just unconditionally respect you. And that includes unconditionally respect people's identities. And I think that's a tenet I try to live my life by. And it's just very frustrating to me that these kids, these teens, these adults, these members of this community aren't seen as people.
Dr. Igler, in the last couple of minutes that we have here, if there was one thing that you wanted people to take away from our time today, what is it?
Well, I have a couple things, but I'll try to summarize it into one.
You can do a couple. Well, you can get away with that.
So I would say, you know, be explicit about your allyship. Be explicit that you are welcoming explanation of pronouns, explanation of preferred names. And, you know, I would say use open terms, use partner. If someone's talking, you know, if you're talking to a younger kid, use the term boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, spouse, you know, just so they know that there's a space to explore that. And if you mess up, it's fine. I mean, these kids are just incredibly gracious and empathetic and wonderful humans generally. And I have screwed up pronouns plenty of times. And a nice correction and an apology from me, and we move right on, and I do better.
That was really hard for me. when my friends started having friends who were changing their pronouns, and I would mess it up and then I would feel really bad about it. And mm-hmm. learning to forgive myself and just do my best was a real lesson for me personally.
You in your notes, I suppose the word I suppose we shouldn't say the word, even though it's not a swear word, but basically, don't be a jerk. And take jerk up several notches to get at what we're talking about. And by the way, I'll say it again. I'm getting really sick of hearing these attacks on wokeism. Woke simply means don't be a, bigoted jerk or prejudiced mm-hmm. jerk or anti-LGBTQ jerk. Stop being a jerk. Dr. Eva Igler, thank you very much. We appreciate the background on this so much. Thanks for chatting with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
All right. Appreciate you, Eva.
Luke Mathers joins us up next with the Civic Media Homeroom. You're up north. It's Friday. We are in love with morning radio. Kristen Lyerly decides to do it every couple of days for us, no matter where she is in the great Northwest and or the upper Midwest. You're at some undisclosed location now. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. It's so good to be alive, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, again, down here in the southern part of the state, it's little bit slight overcast, but otherwise bright. But up north, I know it was rainy, overcast, cold. You had a very long multi-hour drive to your work assignment this weekend. It was cold and drizzly, and yeah, we're ready for a change.
Mm-hmm. I'm ready for spring, like real spring.
We're ready for upbeat tunes like that one from The Cure, Friday I'm in Love. It was part of their 9th studio album, which debuted at number 1 in the UK, number 2 in the US on this day in 1992, which is also the birthday of lead singer Robert Smith. I like the song a lot. I've got a small collection of Friday songs, mm-hmm. I'm sure we'll play Huey Lewis a couple days off coming up in the next hour, and well, you know.
Working
for the weekend. Yes, another great one. Mm-hmm. Do you have another personal Friday song that?
No.
You have to break glass in case of emergency.
No, I usually I have a playlist, like a go-to energy playlist. Mm-hmm. So that's it's reliable. I know if I turn on that playlist that mm-hmm. my mood will immediately elevate.
Gotcha. All right. Let's stay. Number one hit this day in 1973 was from Tony Orlando and Dawn.
Tie a yellow ribbon.
Yeah. You got it. Which, by the way, is a fictional story that Tony Orlando writes about somebody getting out of prison and taking the bus home and everything. People wondered if it had any, personal tie-in or any anecdotal. And he says, nope, just a nice song that he wrote. Made it up. On this day in 1509, one of history's true characters, Henry VIII ascends the throne of England on the death of his father, coincidentally named Henry VII. Henry VIII was 17 at the time, best known for his 6 marriages and his disagreement with the Pope about said marriages, leading him to spin off the Church of England and appoint himself head of the Church, claiming the divine right of kings trumps papal supremacy. He frequently used charges of treason and heresy to quell dissent, and those accused were often executed without a former trial. It's only a rumor that he assumed the throne while wearing a goofy big red trucker's cap that said, "Make England Great Again."
That's a really bad joke, Pat.
But there's a lot of the same kind of power-hungry tendencies are there. Mm-hmm. Coincidentally, another monarch is noted in the news today. This would have been the 97th birthday for Queen Elizabeth. Elizabeth mm-hmm. II, who passed away mm-hmm. not long ago, was born this day in 1926. Annie opened on Broadway this day in 1977. It's at this point that Kristen will now give us a rendition of The Sun Will Come Out Tomorrow.
I desperately want to, but I'm going to scare the listeners.
I know what you're all thinking out there. It's like, wait, she showed restraint on belting out a tune? What's going on over here?
That's one of my favorites. That's like such a good cheerful song.
There you go. So part of the playlist here. Secretary's Day started this day in 1952, now known as Administrative Professionals Day. Let's see. Annie McDowell, American model, actress, you know her from Groundhog Day and others. Born this day in 1958, which makes her, what, 65? Wow. This is Amy Stewart's Knock on Wood. It hit number one this day in 1979. All right, let's see. I don't want to run out of time here. So in the middle of all this, we're also going to say that it's time to give away some Brewers tickets. It was on this day in 1982 that Raleigh Fingers of the Brewers became the first pitcher to record 300 saves. And that leads us to our trivia question. Two tickets to Sunday's game against the Red Sox. We'll email them to you, so don't call unless you can use it. But this is the week, April 15th of 1987. Who threw the only solo no-hitter in Brewers history? Who threw the only solo no-hitter in Brewers history on April 15th, 1987? First one through with the correct answer, and who wants the tickets is going to get them for Sunday's game. And that's, again, those phone numbers are Pat, 844-944-9672789 and 715-388-7155. Who threw that?
If you led with Raleigh Fingers, does that mean that this can't be Raleigh Fingers?
That is very correct because, yeah, we're going to rule out Raleigh Fingers.
Mm-hmm. But he had a great mustache. Do you remember that guy's mustache?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Again, talk about characters. This this day in 1981, Weird Al Yankovic made his TV debut. He was getting some mileage out of the Queen parody of Another One Rides the Bus. And he did that on Tom Snyder's old Tomorrow Show. The number one song this day in 1984 was from Phil Collins. You're the only one who really knew me at all. Take it, Kristen. So take a look at me now. She's only going to lip sync all these things. But there's Phil Collins, number one, 1984, with Against All Odds. His first solo number one hit. He would have six more after that. Sad occasion in history. Prince died this day in 2016, so 7 years ago now, at the age of 57 after overdosing on fentanyl. Elvis Presley had two number one hits on the calendar on this day in 1956 with Heartbreak Hotel, and in 1962 on this day with Good Luck Charm. Oh, you found Heartbreak Hotel.
You sing this one. I could die. Although it's
always crowded. This one could be a good karaoke attempt. Emphasis on attempt.
I'll put it on the list.
Yeah, you do that. for the eventual Civic Media karaoke party.
I have a list.
I wish that was true. I know we keep saying we're going to make one.
Your name is next to Heartbreak Hotel. I'm doing it right now.
Nothing scares me more than the thought that might actually come to fruition. All right. Aaron, I'm not looking at the phone screen, so I will just mention again, if we get somebody, you just give me a wave or jump on in as you did before.
Sounds good. But so call, we haven't had any callers.
But, oh, okay, there we go. Still, the tickets are there. Two tickets for Sunday's 1 p.m. game against Boston. Who threw the only no-hitter, solo no-hitter in Brewers history, April 15th, 1987. By the way, you're saying, wait, was there more than one? Yeah, there was a combined no-hitter. Remember that about a year and a half ago from Corbin Burns and Josh Hader back in September of 2021 against Cleveland. But only one person has thrown a solo no-hitter in Brewers history, so feel free to call during the news break there and see if those tickets are still available for you to win at 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. Kristen, we got a lot of news to cover in the next hour here, including a tale of two states in how you handle Medicaid expansion and a little follow-up to yesterday's discussion with a pediatric psychologist. So do you mind sticking around for all this?
Let's jump in and do it.
All right. A little Elvis for us, a little news and commercials for you coming up next on Up North News Radio.